All right, welcome back, everyone, for another deep dive. Today, we're going to be looking at something pretty complex. We're diving into the potential impacts of a second Trump term, specifically on science in the U.S. So to do that, we've got a whole stack of articles. We've got Nature, we've got The Hill, Inside Higher Ed, AIP.org. Even NPR has some thoughts on this. And from reading through these sources, a few really interesting themes have popped out. I think there's a lot of concern about funding cuts, some anxieties about specific cabinet appointments, and this big question of how international collaboration might fare in, well, a pretty politically charged climate. To help us unpack all of this, we've got our expert here, whose insights on science policy are just invaluable.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Especially given the complexities of this topic.
It's certainly a fascinating issue. There are a lot of facets to it, for sure. The intersection of science and politics always brings its own set of challenges.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think if you'd have started, it would be good to have kind of a quick recap of Trump's first term. You know, I remember being a bit of a roller coaster ride. Nature, for example, they point out those attempts to slash research funding for the NIH and NSF. Now, those are pretty significant agencies in the science world.
Yes, absolutely. Those proposed cuts, although ultimately rejected by Congress, really sent a strong signal about the administration's priorities. And then there was the China initiative.
Oh, yeah. Inside Higher Ed brought that up as well. And they were suggesting that it created this real sense of anxiety, especially around research security.
Yes. The initiative was intended to safeguard U.S. interests in a research and technology.
Right.
But it faced a lot of criticism. It was criticized for unfairly targeting researchers, specifically researchers of Chinese descent, and really fostered this climate of suspicion within academic institutions.
Absolutely. And we can't forget, of course, Trump pulling the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement. The Hill highlighted that as a major international concern. It put the administration's stance on climate change front and center, really.
Yeah, it signaled a real departure from the global consensus on climate action. That agreement had been such a major step towards international collaboration on this really critical issue of climate change.
Yeah, and then, of course, the kind of elephant in the room, the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah.
And the administration's response.
That period really brought the tension between science and politics to the forefront. The administration's approach sometimes contradicted public health guidance, and it faced a lot of scrutiny.
It definitely felt like a very turbulent time for science.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting how the scientific community reacted to that.
Oh, absolutely. We saw remarkable resilience. Researchers mobilized to communicate their findings. They advocated for funding and really pushed back against policies that were deemed detrimental to scientific progress.
So it was almost, you know, maybe a galvanizing experience, like it forced greater awareness of the need for scientists to be involved in policy and public discourse.
It certainly highlighted the importance of scientists engaging beyond the lab, you know, not just staying in their research silos.
Yeah.
Now, as we look towards a potential second term, these articles are raising some new concerns. There are definitely anxieties bubbling up.
Yeah, let's dig into those. What are some of these anxieties that these sources are flagging?
So one prominent concern revolves around the potential impact of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s appointment.
Okay.
The Hill is particularly worried about his stance on vaccines.
Nature goes so far as to call his potential influence especially dangerous, especially for low-income countries that are dependent on organizations like the World Health Organization.
Absolutely. Another area of concern is research security. Inside Higher Ed suggests that we might see further restrictions on international collaborations, especially with China.
This is interesting because NPR actually focuses on how much the U.S. relies on foreign talent, specifically in STEM fields. They discuss the H-1B visa program and how those visas, often used to recruit top scientists and engineers, were a target during Trump's first term.
Yes, that reliance on foreign talent in U.S. science is pretty significant. Restricting access to that talent pool could have a real impact on American research and innovation.
So it sets up this tension between maintaining scientific openness and addressing these concerns about national security. What else are these sources worried about?
A significant concern is the possibility of deeper budget cuts to science agencies. Inside Higher Ed suggests that the National Science Foundation in particular might face something like an 8% reduction.
And AIP.org raises the possibility of some agencies like NOAA facing significant restructuring or even potentially being dismantled.
It's a drastic proposal with some potentially significant consequences for research and scientific advancement in those fields.
It seems like there's this push towards a more business-oriented approach to science. AIP.org points out these initiatives to funnel R&D funding. towards small businesses and to accelerate the commercialization of research.
It does raise a very important question. What's the right balance between fundamental research, which might not have those immediate practical applications,
right,
and prioritizing research that leads directly to commercial outcomes?
It feels like there are a lot of different perspectives on that. We've definitely uncovered a lot of potential challenges here. Are there any, I don't know, glimmers of hope for action and advocacy amidst all these concerns?
There are definitely opportunities, even in a potentially challenging landscape. These sources point to several avenues for action and advocacy.
Okay, let's explore those. What are some of the ideas being floated?
Well, a lot of articles are emphasizing the importance of direct engagement with policymakers.
Yeah.
The Hill, for instance, urges scientists to be proactive, to really educate those in power about the societal and economic benefits of research.
So it's about making the case for science, demonstrating its real-world impact.
Exactly. And then there's the critical role of public communication. Both Nature and The Hill stress the need for clear, open communication to help rebuild public trust in science.
This feels especially crucial, you know, given our current era of misinformation.
Absolutely. The ability to communicate complex scientific findings, but in an accessible way, an engaging way, is more vital than ever.
Yeah.
It's not just about debunking misinformation. It's also about inspiring the next generation of scientists and fostering a deeper appreciation for science in our daily lives.
What about the role of institutions beyond the federal government?
Several sources highlight the potential for state governments, private industries, and non-governmental organizations to play a larger role, especially in areas like climate change, where federal action may be limited.
So it's about building those coalitions and finding that common ground, working together to drive that progress, even when the federal landscape presents obstacles.
Precisely. Collective action can be a powerful force. You know, one thing that really struck me, especially in that NPR article, was the emphasis on international collaboration.
Yeah, they really underscored how much American science relies on talent from all over the world.
Yeah, it's not just about attracting those brilliant minds to the U.S. It's also about the partnerships and networks that form when researchers from different countries work together. Science often thrives when diverse perspectives and approaches converge.
Mm.
But this idea of global scientific exchange seems to be facing potential headwinds under a second Trump administration.
Several sources pointed to that. Are raising concerns about tighter restrictions, particularly on collaborations with nations perceived as competitors, like China.
The Inside Higher Ed article specifically mentioned the recent expiration of the Science and Technology Cooperation Agreement between the U.S. and China, and it's uncertain whether that will be renewed, which could really signal a shift towards a more restricted approach. You know, this agreement has facilitated some really valuable exchanges for decades.
Then there's the issue of visas for foreign researchers. NPR shared the story of Leili Mordozavi. She's a brain scientist at Stanford. And she's anxious about securing a visa to work in the U.S. She's even considering positions in Canada or the U.K.
It's a valid concern. During Trump's first term, there were several attempts to limit H-1B visas, which are often used to recruit those highly skilled professionals, including scientists and engineers.
It's almost like we're potentially closing the door.
Yeah.
On some of the brightest minds in the world. NPR even suggested that countries like Germany might benefit by attracting that top talent that might otherwise come to the U.S.
It's definitely a competitive global landscape for talent, and policies that make it harder for foreign researchers to work in the U.S. could have lasting consequences for American science.
This tension between international collaboration and those research security concerns really speaks to a broader theme we're seeing here, this America First idea, and how that might play out in the realm of science.
It's a theme that echoes throughout these articles. AIP.org, for example, discusses proposals to withhold federal funds from universities that accept money from the Chinese government, and also to restrict the number of visas granted to students from what they call enemy nations.
It's definitely a complex issue. Protecting national interests and ensuring research security are valid concerns. But science has historically flourished through openness, collaboration, and the free exchange of ideas.
It's a delicate balance to strike. It really is.
This America First philosophy also seems to be influencing the conversation.
Yeah.
About science funding and priorities.
Yes, several sources point to a potential shift towards a more, you know, utilitarian, results-oriented approach to science, an emphasis on research that yields clear economic benefits, and that can be swiftly commercialized.
Like those proposals from AIP.org to increase funding for small businesses and push for that quicker commercialization. It feels like there's an underlying assumption that market forces should be the primary drivers of scientific progress.
It's a perspective gaining traction, for sure. And it has implications for what type of research gets prioritized and funded.
Will there be that continued support for curiosity-driven research, the kind that might not have those immediate practical applications, but could lead to groundbreaking discoveries down the line?
That's the crucial question. Nicholas Dirks, who's the president of the New York Academy of Sciences, he makes a really compelling argument in The Hill about the importance of foundational, curiosity-driven research.
He uses CRISPR gene editing technology as an example. You know, it's had a massive impact on medicine and agriculture, but it originated from curiosity-driven research into bacterial immune systems.
It's a prime example of how investing in that fundamental research, even without those immediate practical applications, can yield unexpected and transformative results in the long run.
Yeah, it highlights the importance of scientists being able to effectively communicate the value of science to policymakers and the public, not just advocating for funding, but explaining that process of scientific discovery, helping people understand that it's not always a straight line from research to results.
Exactly. Science is a journey, not just a destination. And it's a journey worth taking, even when the destination is uncertain.
We've talked a lot about potential challenges. What are some things that make you optimistic about the future of science, even within, a potentially difficult political climate?
Well, one encouraging aspect is that there's this growing recognition that science isn't solely a federal issue.
Yeah.
You know, it permeates every facet of our lives.
Mm.
And as we've discussed, there's this burgeoning movement to engage state governments, private industries, and NGOs in advancing those science-based solutions.
The Hill highlighted the role.
Yeah.
You know, that state governments can play in tackling issues like climate change.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then there's the power of the scientific community itself. You know, nature urges scientists to speak out, engage with policymakers, and communicate their findings to the public.
Yeah, they called for courage, tenacity, strength, and unity. A reminder that scientists have a responsibility to defend the integrity of science.
Yeah.
And advocate for its role in society.
It's not just about scientists, though. You know, public understanding and appreciation of science are paramount.
Yeah.
The more people understand how science works, the more they understand its importance and how to critically evaluate scientific information, the better equipped we'll all be to navigate these challenges ahead.
It's about empowering individuals to be those critical thinkers, to be informed citizens, capable of engaging in meaningful conversations about science. We've covered a lot of ground today, from those potential anxieties to those opportunities for action. What are your key takeaways from this deep dive? I mean, what concerns you the most? And what gives you hope? Welcome back to our deep dive, looking into the potential impacts of a second Trump administration on science here in the U.S. We've covered a lot of ground, haven't we? Unearthed potential challenges, anxieties about specific policies, but also some of those, glimmers of hope and opportunities for action. What's so interesting to me, though, is how this whole conversation about science and a potential second Trump term really connects to these even larger questions about the role of science in society.
Absolutely. I think the concerns raised in these articles, you know, things like funding cuts, restrictions on collaboration, the politicization of certain scientific issues, it all speaks to this broader tension that's been simmering for a while now.
It's this fundamental question of who gets to decide what science is pursued and how those decisions are made.
Yeah, traditionally, science has been seen as this objective pursuit of knowledge, right?
Right?
Driven by curiosity and this desire to understand the world. But increasingly, it's being viewed through this more utilitarian lens, with an emphasis on its practical applications and ability to drive economic growth.
There's this expectation for science to deliver immediate solutions, right? And if it doesn't, some start to question its value, whether it deserves funding.
It's a perspective that's gaining a lot of traction, especially in a political environment where there's this pressure to demonstrate those tangible results.
It's interesting how this tension between those different views of science seems to be playing out in many of the issues we've discussed.
Uh-huh.
When you take, for example, the debate over funding for basic versus applied research, or even those concerns about restricting international collaboration for the sake of national security.
Absolutely. It's about finding that balance, right, between supporting scientific inquiry for the sake of knowledge, recognizing that potential for unexpected breakthroughs, while also making sure that science addresses societal needs and those pressing challenges we face.
It's a tough balancing act, for sure.
Yeah.
So where does all this leave us? I mean, what does all of this mean for the future of science in America?
I think these sources offer a cautionary tale. You know, they highlight those potential pitfalls, but they also provide some hope, suggesting ways that the scientific community and their allies can navigate this evolving landscape.
Like by engaging with policymakers, right?
Yeah.
Forming coalitions with various stakeholders and effectively communicating the value of science, not just its practical applications, but also its ability to deepen our understanding of the world.
Exactly. And I think it's important to remember that this isn't just the responsibility of scientists. We all have a role to play in supporting science, whether that's staying informed about scientific issues, participating in those thoughtful discussions, or advocating for policies that promote scientific literacy and investment in research.
As we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with this question. Given the challenges and opportunities we've discussed, what role do you envision for yourself in shaping the future of science?
It's definitely a question worth pondering. I think the future of science really rests in our collective hands.
That wraps up today's deep dive. Huge thanks to our expert for guiding us through this very intricate topic, and to you, listener. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey of exploration. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep the conversation going. Until next time.